Today's episode of Dog Nation Daily is brought to you by Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Presented by DogNation.com, this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
There is something that occasionally happens this time of year, and today is one of those days. We plan ahead a little bit in terms of what we want to talk about, and every now and then something happens where you think, okay, well, the thing I was going to do, because we essentially had a show ready for today, and the thing I was going to do, I sort of decided, well, actually, maybe something else is more interesting for us to talk about today. And so we called a little bit of an audible on the fly. And I want to set this up for you by saying I'm about to play for you a fairly strange piece of audio. Now, we could do this at sort of the surface level of here's this fairly prominent voice. We're going to hear him say something kind of strange about Carson Beck. And we could just sort of marvel at the weirdness of all of this. And that in itself would probably work as content. But I actually want to go a little deeper on this, if you don't mind, because I think the very strange criticism that, you know, Colin Cowherd, who many of you know, and those who do know, often frequently people don't like Colin for whatever reason. Just, you know, that's your own, you know, personal taste. And I understand all of that. But we're going to do more than just say, hey, here's this really kind of polarizing loudmouth in the sports world saying something very, very strange about Carson Beck. We're going to use this as a little bit of a reminder about an ongoing discussion that exists around Georgia, even within the bubble of Dog Nation, of people who obviously know this situation far better than what you're about to hear in this clip that I'm going to play for you. In fact, this kind of ties in pretty closely to something that Terrence Edwards brought up on yesterday's show. So let's begin this way. This was not the Colin Cowherd like radio show, the thing that you see on FS1, if you ever watch that. This is from his like podcast, which I guess you don't get enough of Colin on the regular show. Now you've got to have an additional show where even more content is spewed out. And he's got, I think it's Nick Wright, the guy's name is. And I think that Nick Wright sometimes, I don't know. I think that sometimes, you know, some of his hot takes are halfway interesting. But the two of them are coming together. Now, this is a little bit of an awkward moment. The two of them are coming together, and they're trying to figure out who the top quarterbacks in the 2025 NFL draft are going to be. Now, total confession here, many of you know this. If you listen to me each and every day, eventually you're going to hear me forget somebody's name. I don't know why. Names that I know, sometimes the synapses just don't fire as quickly as the mouth moves, and you're just looking for a name and you can't find it. So that's sort of what happens here. Two guys that don't seem to know a whole lot about Carson Beck, and yet even in Colin Cowherd's ignorance of Beck, he has still got a fully formed opinion about how good Beck is going to be as an NFL quarterback, which would seem to be a little bit of a contradiction. But nonetheless, here is a very strange criticism that, or at least, you know, a little level of skepticism that Cowherd shows to Carson Beck. And I want you to tell me when this is over with, if you have any idea what either of these two doofuses are talking about. Take a listen to this.
You know, Shedeur Sanders, the kid Cam Ward at Miami, who's pretty interesting. There's a kid, Notre Dame got a transfer who's pretty interesting.
No, and Quinn Ewers, people like him, and then there's one more that we're forgetting. That's the guy who's most likely to go number one. I talked about it on the show today, so I see if I can remember it. But I was just about to look, like, hold on a second. Oh, Carson Beck is the other one, the kid from Georgia that people something.
Yeah. I don't think he's a top five pick. I think he's he's Georgia good.
I think you're probably right.
So, and listen, look, if you listen to me every day, I'm sure I say dumb stuff all the time. And if you wanted to splice together all the dumb stuff that I've said and make a really long compilation of it all, there is no doubt you would have no shortage of stuff. I mean, you can't talk as long as I talk as frequently as I do without having a whole long list of, you know, dumb things being said. But there is nothing more like old school sports radio than going from 5 seconds ago, I don't know who this guy is, to 10 seconds later, I'm also sure he won't be a top five pick. Like you know, this idea that I don't know enough about him to know what his name is, Carson Beck, but I know his game well enough to know how high he's going to be drafted a year from now. Like, that is just the most incongruent nonsense that you're ever going to be able to find. It just is. But then beyond that, can somebody please, and I mean this genuinely, this is not a rhetorical question, Can somebody please tell me what he means when he says, oh, yeah, Carson Beck, he's just Georgia good. And what's funny is it Nick Wright, is that the guy's name? Nick Wright immediately agrees with him. Oh, yeah, I totally agree. He's just Georgia good. As if this is a well-understood phrase. Like, what is Georgia good? Like, what does that mean? Does that mean that he's only good because he plays at Georgia? Well, that seems hard to imagine, given the fact that right now Beck is 3-1 to be the number one overall pick, if you want to go to the betting odds in this right now. And the idea that we downgrade quarterbacks simply because they play good teams. Look at J.J. McCarthy from Michigan. I mean, my gosh, he was top 10 pick in this past NFL draft, despite the fact he threw the ball like 9 times all year long. The idea that you're going to discount a quarterback simply because he plays on a good team, that's not what happened with McCarthy at Michigan here this year. It's just not. So, as I told you before, we want to do more on this than just kind of like remark and marvel at the weirdness and, I would say, the wrongness of the criticism of Carson Beck. I think it's important to take this in a slightly different direction there as well, because there is something really interesting about Colin Cowherd being the guy to say, Carson Beck's not a top 5 pick. He's just Georgia good, whatever that means. Because if you know the sort of hot take world at all, and sort of the people who kind of live in the hot take space, one of the things that a lot of people are aware of is that, Colin Cowherd, the radio host, the FS1 personality, is very much in the bag for USC coach Lincoln Riley. And by the way, Cowherd does not make any kind of, bones about this, whatsoever. He's very honest about the fact that he has been a very big fan of Lincoln Riley. And my guess is that if Cowherd was sitting here based on, kind of previous conversation that he's had, is that he'd be very open about his admiration for Riley. In fact, I think we may have the show on the screen here. How much Cowherd sort of likes Riley. There was a post by Front Office Sports going back, a year or two ago when Lincoln Riley bought a big house out in L.A., first taking the USC job, a $17.2 million house. Cowherd on the X platform put out that my coach deserves the best. That's what Cowherd said, basically acknowledging Lincoln Riley's my coach. That's the brand of football a guy like Colin Cowherd really likes. Unlike Georgia, where he's going to downgrade and sort of disregard Carson Beck because he's only a Georgia quarterback. Once again, our reason for pointing this out, the love that Cowherd has for USC, the skepticism he has for Georgia, is not about being mad or getting our feelings hurt. I think what this is really about, though, is I would say a prevailing narrative about Georgia that's just wrong, that's continually and consistently misunderstood, even though the numbers are far different, I think, than people realize. Because once again, if someone like Cowherd was sitting here and you were to ask him, hey, what do you think about Carson Beck? Well, first of all, you'd have to look him up on the internet and know who he is. But then after that, he'd say, oh, well, that guy's just Georgia good. He plays in a Georgia offense. It's not an offense like my guy, my coach, as he calls him, Lincoln Riley at USC. And the truth is, there are people a lot less famous than Colin Cowherd who sort of all think the same thing, that, oh, well, USC, Lincoln Riley and Caleb Williams and, guys before that when Riley was Oklahoma, that's what real offense is. Georgia's fine, but, man, USC, that's real offense. And this is kind of the point that I want to get to here today. Like, do people actually realize how good Georgia has been offensively the last couple of years under a couple of different offensive coordinators? And do they perhaps realize how well that sets up a guy like Carson Beck for even more success here this year? I want to show this to you. These aren't the prettiest graphics in the world. I made them, but I think they kind of tell the story if you're watching on video. And if not, I'll describe it to you. Like, look at a very simple stat that comes from our friends at CFB Stats here. Look at yards per play. Very easy to understand, right? It's like, how many yards do you get every time you snap the ball? Passing play, running play, whatever else. Well, for this past season, USC's yards per play, third best in America at 7.39 yards per play. Do you know what Georgia's yards per play was this past season? 7.26. You're talking about, 13 tenths of a yard or 13 hundredths of a yard more per play for USC than for Georgia. Essentially, right there the same. A similar story going back a year before that to 2022. USC was also third best in American yards per play in 2022 at 7.18. Georgia one hundredth of a yard behind that at 7.17. Once again, on a yards per play basis over the course of the last couple of years of Lincoln Riley being there in Los Angeles, Georgia and USC have essentially been the same. When you look at scoring, which is perhaps the offensive stat that matters the most, once again, you're looking at a very similar situation. For this past season, USC was third in America at points per game at 41.8 points per game. Georgia was fifth best in America at 40.1 points per game. Once again, essentially, for all intents and purposes, no difference. Same thing in 2022 there as well. USC was third best in America in points per game at 41.4. Georgia almost had exactly the same number at 41.1. So the point I'm getting to here is I think there's this prevailing belief that USC, a program like that, is better than a program like Georgia offensively. But my sincere question to anyone who thinks that, what stat would you use to prove that? If it's not yards per play and if it's not points per game, what stat would you use to prove that some of these real offenses are better than whatever Georgia's supposed to be and whatever downgrade you give to Beck because he's just a good Georgia quarterback, but not a real quarterback like Caleb Williams is? Based on what metric would you use to prove that? And, you know, I'm obviously not the only one talking about this kind of stuff. There's this belief out there. Terrence Edwards brought this up yesterday based on something he'd put on social media. In fact, let me show you the post from Terrence on X that it's not just quarterbacks like Beck who sometimes get overlooked in the Georgia offense. It's, as Terrence pointed out, it's also his position, wide receiver, for you know whom this can be true there too. As Terrence put out on X, he says, how about an appreciation post for Kirby Smart? The narrative about Georgia that can't get wide receivers drafted should be debunked. Kirby Smart recruited four wide receivers who were in the same room together who've all been drafted. George Pickens, Ladd McConkie, A.D. Mitchell, and Jermaine Burton were all recruited by Kirby. And then he goes on to mention Marcus Rosemary-Jack Saint, hopefully getting a chance to be a part of the NFL there as well. But when you see the NFL draft success, guys who played at Georgia and did well at Georgia have had, that also kind of debunks that myth the same way that we believe that Carson Beck is in the midst of debunking whatever myth exists about him as just a Georgia quarterback and not more on and not more than just that. So when we had Terrence on the show yesterday, he brought this up and talked a little bit further about his belief about the fact that Georgia's wide receivers and Georgia's ability to cultivate wide receivers at times just kind of gets overlooked. This is what Terrence said about that on the show yesterday.
You got to get Kirby and company a round of applause that at one point they had, you know, George Pickens, A.D. Yeah. Mitchell, Jermaine Burton, Ladd McConkie, all those guys in the same room. So, as I say, any receivers are the myth that Georgia's can't develop receivers, they can't get receivers drafted. That myth has to be debunked by now.
So, as I told you before, we want to do more than just like get our feelings hurt or be mad about the fact that people aren't showing enough love to Georgia and its wide receivers or showing enough love to Carson Beck or showing enough love to Georgia overall in comparison to programs that are supposed to be better offensively, and yet you'd be hard-pressed to find stats that prove that that's actually true. This is about more than just getting your feelings hurt or more than just saying, why won't people give us credit? Maybe not getting enough credit for this actually works to Georgia's advantage. Because everybody knows how good Georgia has been on defense, even if this past year it wasn't quite what it had been in 2021 and 2022. But everybody sort of knows what you're in for when you get ready to face the Georgia defense. Maybe there are coaches out there that think the same way the media does and don't quite realize what Georgia is offensively. And maybe that has worked to Georgia's advantage, that when you gear up and you get ready to face the Georgia defense, maybe they assume they get a little bit of a break when Georgia's got the football because somehow they're not going to be quite as explosive and quite as dynamic as the stats suggest that they are. And maybe that's why Georgia keeps having success year over year over year. And that is the overall bottom line. Whether Colin Cowherd knows it or what's his name, Nick Wright, whether he knows it or the types of folks that Terrence Edwards point out that seem to overlook Georgia wide receivers. No matter how much ignorance may exist on this topic, the facts speak for themselves. Georgia has been a dominant offense for 3 years now. And with Carson Beck returning for 2024, this offense has a chance to be even better. And the radio guys may not know this, but this time next year, Carson Beck very likely could be more than just a top five quarterback, a top five player taken. If things work out, he could be the number one overall pick. And guys like Colin Cowherd will no doubt be left surprised and wrong, and frankly not for the first time. My name's Brandon Adams, and this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans, presented today by Kroger. We are happy to have you with us, no matter how you get to us today. Across all video platforms at 10 a.m., radio on Athens Sports Radio 960 The Rep podcast, wherever you find them there as well. Just so happy to have you with us here today, and so thankful to our friends at Kroger who make it all possible. And of course, public service announcement, important for you to keep this in mind. We have got Mother's Day coming up, and when it comes to getting ready for Mother's Day and making sure you're locked in, ready to go, our friends at Kroger have got you covered on everything you need to make it special for your mom or the mom in your life. They can help you plan the brunch that you want to have. How about the mimosa bar? See, here's the move, no disrespect to the local restaurants, but you know, sometimes Mother's Day can be a little hard to get in, get the restaurant seat, and we got a lot of kids there. It sort of turns into chaos. Doing this on your own at home, having the great meal, setting up the mimosa bar, doing all that kind of stuff. How about the special floral arrangement that you can put together there? Kroger has a way to make Mother's Day as special as you want it to be, with big savings on flowers and candies and everything else in between. That is what Kroger's all about. So you can shop in store or online. And of course, you get some great greeting cards there too. So Kroger.com/Mother's Day for more on that. That's Kroger.com/Mother's Day for more on that. All right, so busy show for us. It's Jeff Sintel, UGA Recruiting here, coming up in just a couple of minutes. But prior to that, I do want to go around the doghouse here today. Now, there is big news around the Georgia football program. It's going to get some national attention. Kirby Smart signed another contract extension yesterday, kind of creating some distance between himself and the next highest paid coach in college football here right now. Kirby about to cash in to the tune of about $13 million per year. Kirby had a statement about this. You could read this yesterday at dognation.com. I'll read it for you here right now of what Kirby says about this new contract that has in place there. I continue to be grateful and humbled by our administration's commitment to our football program. The current culture in collegiate athletics is ever-changing and as challenging as ever been, so I truly appreciate the leadership that our team is continually provided. I have an immense pride for representing my alma mater and look forward to that relationship continuing for many years to come. So a very classy statement by Kirby Smart on the heels of a very, very significant contract extension and a little bit of a raise there for him. And I think that it leads us to a question that we need to ask, and I think the answer to this needs to be a real answer. The question is, why is Kirby Smart worth $13 million? Now, at first, it seems like the answer to this question would be simple because of all the winning that Georgia does. They've won two national championships. They won, 29 games in a row, or 30 games, or whatever the number ended up being. You know, they've long winning streak, couple of national championships. They have essentially dominated the sport. That's why Kirby Smart makes the money that he makes. And to a certain extent, it is just as simple as that. But in another way of looking at this, it's actually a lot more complicated, because while we're all like very much involved in the college, you know, football world, we sort of understand this world, there are people who kind of live on the periphery of all of this who don't exactly like, you know, college athletics as it currently is. They're going to come in and they're going to view Kirby Smart's contract as something that's actually oppressive. Well, you know, it's not just Kirby Smart who leads to those victories. It's also the players themselves. And, you know, that money ought to be given to the players. And, you know, Kirby Smart ought to be working for $20 an hour, you know, something along those lines, which is an oversimplification. But there's a version of that argument that you sort of hear. And that argument is growing in its, prevalence to the point that stuff like that does have to be considered a little bit more. And so the answer to why Kirby Smart is worth $13 million a year does have to go beyond just the simple statement of he's worth that money because he's led Georgia to these wins. That Kirby's actual value, I believe, goes beyond just the winning. That his actual value to the players that choose of their own free will to play Georgia. This is the difference between this brand of the sport and the NFL. The NFL, you don't have, at least if you're, you know, one of the higher valued players, you don't have the freedom to choose your own team. The NFL tells you where you're going to go. You're essentially conscripted. In college football, free choice still exists. It's not necessarily the free market, but it is free choice. And that's a very important thing I think we don't talk nearly enough about. But in the free choice world of college athletics, players get to choose where they want to go as long as there's an offer waiting on them. And players continually choose to come to Georgia. Now, why is that? I was thinking this morning about, and this is kind of corny, but I was thinking about this nonetheless. The California Gold Rush. You know what that is? You probably read about this in school, studied about this in school. There's an old saying, and I don't know if this is true. This is probably one of those sort of apocryphal things that just sort of gets passed down through time. But there was an old saying that the man who got the richest on the California gold rush was not one of the gold miners. It was actually Levi Strauss. And whether that part's true or not, it is true that Levi Strauss, who became famous as the sort of the founder of Levi's jeans, that he did move out to California when the gold rush kind of was getting started. And he went out there for the idea of not mining for gold himself, but providing the tools necessary in the form of durable clothing for those who did want to mine for gold. And Strauss did become very rich because of that. So in other words, this is a real story, whether, you know, some of the parts of this have been exaggerated or not. The basic facts of this story are real, is that Strauss saw an opportunity to enrich himself by giving tools to those who wanted to enrich themselves. And that's always been a really smart way to be in business. That's what Strauss did. And to a certain extent, that's what I believe that Kirby Smart does too. In a moment, we're going to talk to Jeff Sintel about this, a story that he wrote at DogNation.com about all of the relatively unheralded recruits that have come through Georgia only to leave as very high-value NFL draft picks. The most recent and perhaps the most prominent example of all of this is Ladd McConkey, who as a recruit coming out of high school was ranked outside the top 1,000, I believe outside the top 1,100, and ended up being, you know, taken within the first, 34, 35 picks of the NFL draft, has a very bright NFL future, and that fortune for him was developed and enhanced during his time at Georgia. And obviously, there are so many more examples of that. Georgia, under Kirby Smart, has more first-round picks than it has losses. Pretty clearly, Smart's football expertise is making very rich men out of very many people who come through this program. And it's that expertise given to the players who choose to come here, that's what keeps the pipeline of Georgia football humming. So when you ask the question of, well, why does Kirby Smart make $13 million a year? It actually goes far beyond just the fact that he wins games. Kirby Smart is rich because he makes other men rich, and there will always be money in that. And that is around the doghouse here today on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Kroger.
And across the SEC or wherever the recruiting trail may lead, here's a DogNation.com insider.
Say hello to Jeff Sintel here, Dog Nation Daily, presented by Kroger. We were just talking about this a moment ago, that and Jeff wrote about this. You know, when you look at this most recent NFL draft, recruits that you covered turning themselves into draft picks, you see an amazing story for Kirby Smart. Not only is it guys like, you know, Trayvon Walker, who are former elite recruits who became exactly what they were supposed to be, but it's the most recent example being Ladd McConkey and others of guys who were nowhere near as heralded. In fact, they weren't heralded at all, and yet they became linchpin players for the Georgia program and prominent draft prospects in their own right. As you investigated this, Jeff, and researched this for your story, you know, what did you find about this? How unique is it that Georgia has had as much success on the field with lesser recruited players and in terms of the NFL draft with players who don't quite have a recruiting profile that matches their overall NFL draft success? Got you muted, Jeff. We got you muted there. We'll see if we can get you unmuted and get you ready to go.
Hey, Brandon, can you hear me, man?
I sure can. Good morning to you.
Hey, man, I think it's kind of a culture thing there. A lot of it's Georgia finding and identifying players. Georgia has a reputation now for bringing in players that will be successful if they make it through the gauntlet of Georgia, through the practice culture, rising up the depth chart, competing and performing. Lots of NFL organizations, Brendan. It's not just the Philadelphia Eagles and those Philly Dogs anymore. It's Green Bay. They have a very strong contingent. You see even a guy like Jim Harbaugh picking Ladd McConkey there. He knows what a Georgia football team is all about, the culture there. I talked to a lot of former NFL players that now, Brandon, have sons that are being recruited by Georgia, and they totally appreciate and get the culture that's in place at Georgia. I think it's almost the thing there where you see a player like Ladd who's been so successful, and man, that's such a story. You know, I wanted to lead that enterprise story there with a lot about Ladd because, man, I remember his recruiting well. It's like 3 weeks, 2 weeks before signing day in the 2020 class. And I'm going up to Chatsworth, not too far from my North Georgia roots. And this guy has no stars. He really has, like, I remember Coastal Carolina, Army, UTC, Chattanooga. Those were the schools looking at him, but Georgia was on him. Georgia saw him play basketball. Georgia saw something. They didn't have the skill set there of a twitchy guy that could get a really quick release off the line and burn those five-star corners that Georgia have. I remember getting a reaction from Keely Ringo when he saw the film of Ladd McConkey, and he's like, oh my gosh, that guy's going to be a problem. He's coming to us. And it was almost like Georgia had just found this guy in their backyard. The Tennessee story there about, man, he has more, his family, the McConkey family, probably has more Tennessee stuff in their house than you have Georgia's stuff in your house. And pretty close. The Dogs offered, and he goes up to Tennessee kind of hat in hand thinking, okay, if major power juggernaut Georgia offers, certainly Tennessee will. Well, Tennessee didn't. Tennessee, to their defense, they actually had like three scholarship four-star receivers in the class, and they didn't have room for another scholarship receiver. But consequently, Tennessee hasn't had a receiver picked as high as Ladd McConkey in the NFL draft since Cordarrelle Patterson in 2013. I just think Ladd is now the poster boy, the cover boy, the billboard for NFL development at Georgia. 1,160 overall recruit. Brandon, that was after he got the Georgia bump, after he got the offer, after he signed. Number 166 wide receiver in the country, and he becomes the number 34 overall pick in the draft. And it's not just Ladd. You had Javon Bullard, rated as a cornerback, moves up tremendously. You have Tyke Smith way back in the class of 2019. Now he goes to West Virginia. He comes to Georgia, sits out a year, but it really seems like the Georgia stamp, the Georgia meat grinder, if you will, produces NFL performers and guys that they know will thrive on the Sunday league.
Yeah, I think that's really interesting. And the phrase that I've used a couple times this week is when you look at the number of four and five star players that Georgia signs, you know, their blue chip ratio, as Bud Elliott calls it, is going to be somewhere in that sort of like 75 to 80% mark. That's most what this roster is. But then when you also add the Bullards and the McConkeys and over the years, the Jordan Davises and guys like that, you know, to the rest of this, you know, roster profile, Jeff, it's almost like cheating. It's almost like it's an unfair advantage to add, you know, lesser recruits who play at the same level as the major, you know, top flight recognized recruits do. The fact that Georgia's supplementing its roster seemingly on a yearly basis so well with these, you know, three-star and lower in some cases type names, you know, it's almost an unfair advantage to go along with the kind of elite recruits who are expected to play well.
It's almost like Georgia kind of creates these guys, Brandon. And it's like if they can do it at Georgia, the Georgia, like I said earlier, like the Georgia stamp kind of creates it. And let's not forget, this is an age, Brandon. Like, look at the 2022 class, for example. I believe it's like 48% of that class has already transferred out or has found another home other than Georgia. But what you see, if you bring a lot of three stars in with a lot of promise and a lot of potential, number one, it is a huge evaluation plus here for Georgia. Like, it's not only development, it's evaluation of a guy saying, this guy can give us what we need. He can hang with the guys we have in our program. And maybe it adds to the team culture a little bit in terms of, well, these guys are really going to eat off the floor when they get into Athens, because there's not a sense of entitlement. There's a sense of, I have to prove it. And those five-star, you know, incredible players that have heard how great they are for forever, they see these three stars with some very marvelous skills in terms of, hey, these guys can really play. They have certain skill sets that certain areas where maybe they weren't blessed with height, speed, strength, all that, maybe playing at a big school, maybe exposure, but they've got core great football ability, especially what Georgia needs. Georgia needed that Ladd McConkey type. And then they've tried to replace it in successive recruiting classes now. Very hard to do, but I think it creates a great culture thing. And Brandon, if we're being honest, those three stars in this day and age that Kirby, and it was once Will, but now Mike Bobo and Schumann say, you know, this guy can really play for us. It's going to be a little bit easier on the collective effort in the NIL front when you have a lot of Javon Bullards and Tyke Smiths and even a Kamari Lassiter. Kamari Lassiter, Savannah native, there's a homegrown Georgia element to that, but he spent his high school career in Tuscaloosa, really in the backyard of Nick Saban in Alabama. And Nick Saban in Alabama didn't really know what Kamari Lassiter was. Was he a safety? Was he a corner? Was he a nickel? Was he an offensive player? Meanwhile, Georgia had its type. They saw a future bedrock corner for their program in Kamari. And I think this is not only finding the right players, but it's also looking really hard to find the right players, the right personalities, the right mindsets, and then also finding guys that they can develop and that will hang around all those other All-American players on the Georgia roster.
You had a big interview Wednesday with a very big target, Juan Gaston, the offensive lineman out of Westlake. How did you find Juan, and what's the latest on, I think, a real name to know when it comes to the trenches for this 2025 class?
Yeah, big name. He said he's kind of, and that video kind of says it all. He was very honest, B.A. He told me he's a little bit over 6'7". He's 369 there. Georgia and other schools, they want to get him around 330, 335 ideally. And then he would really be an instant first down delivery device right there. Right tackle, left tackle. He says Georgia brings up the Marius Mims parallel quite a lot. They see him doing those similar type things. Juan told me that he could play guard, he could play right tackle, he could play left tackle. He's got a lot of visits scheduled. He told me, very frankly, he's like, he's going to let his recruitment ride a little bit. He's going to let it go past the summer. He's going to let it go to maybe the middle of his senior season there after he visits a bunch of schools. I think Georgia is a major contender there to eventually sign Juan Gaston Jr. Has a lot to do with his teammate, Travis Smith, but it also has a lot to do with just the way Kirby and Georgia and that offensive line room has been developed. Brandon, if you look at the track record recently, it's Isaiah Wynn, first rounder, Andrew Thomas, first rounder, Broderick Jones, first rounder, Amarius Mims, first rounder. Much like the recruitment with David Sanders, if you want to break out the NFL development tree and look about who's putting guys in the league and putting guys in the first round, Georgia's going to be aces in all those categories. And not only that, it's guys that don't go high in the draft. Look at Jamari Salyer is the perfect example. Goes in the sixth round, and I think in two seasons, he must have started 90% of his games in the NFL. So the offensive line room is rolling in Athens, and Georgia sees another prize target there in Juan Gaston Jr., the son of an ACC basketball player, Juan Gaston, who starred and played some good basketball there for Georgia Tech. I mean, Juan's a funny kid, man. I think it's really going to be about relationships with him and how well schools get to know him and have built a relationship with him. He's going to go see Dan Lanning out in Oregon. Oregon was his childhood dream school, but you got to talk to Juan a lot of times before he gets to open up. I know in my experience, Brandon, I've proceeded and I've kind of progressed from the path of, he gave me a lot of 4 and 5 word answers to questions about 2 years ago. And now I'm getting paragraphs out of the big man. And it's kind of what it is, his coaching staff. The head coach at Westlake told me it was about 8 months before Juan started talking to him. And he was a defensive coach on his own team.
That's really interesting. Now, you mentioned Travis Smith, the teammate there at Westlake. I think this kind of sets up, that's another guy you, by the way, had on Before the Hedges on Wednesday. And you can see the Juan Gaston interview there along with Travis Smith there too. And I think it's the position that Smith plays that's starting to get really interesting. Obviously, that's the name we've been talking about for a while. C.J. Wiley there as well. A lot of buzz around him there as of late. What is kind of the latest on where things stand with Georgia and the wide receiver position here for this 2025 class?
Yeah, I know it's one of your favorite positions to talk about in recruiting, Brandon. I think Georgia's recruiting class at receiver got to have Travis Smith Jr. in there, and I think it better have C.J. Wiley in there. Those are two in-state guys. They're Terrence Edwards Wide Receiver Academy protégés, so they know a little bit about Georgia and about development. They know a little bit about the Dogs. The Dogs have made them a priority for some time. Talking to C.J. yesterday, C.J. is a guy that feels comfortable. He can make his decision before his senior year. The same thing goes for Travis Smith. He wants to have his thing done in early to mid to late July. Brandon, I'm gonna give a little bit of nugget here. You remember in July, right around vacation time for a lot of hardworking media types in the Georgia market, Georgia popped it up where Kirby was like an air traffic controller and he was having to commit every day for about 6 days.
Yeah.
I think that's what Georgia is going to try to do again in July with those big booms, kind of like those July fireworks, kind of line up some priority targets. And I find it very funny. There's probably a great story here, Brandon, but I didn't think you and I would ever reach the month of May in a recruiting calendar where Wake Forest was rated higher than Georgia on the recruiting rankings. But Georgia's 13, I believe, right now. Wake Forest is 12. Syracuse and our good friend Fran Brown is, I believe, number 8. I think Auburn's even higher. But the reason why, Brandon, is Georgia only has 8 commitments. They're going to stack up a bunch in July and change all that. But you get yourself CJ Wiley right here, Brandon. And again, this video, man, I'm sitting there looking at the legs. I'm looking at the discipline. I know this. The NIL era has created a diva culture at wide receiver where these wide receivers command a lot more money than even maybe some more vital positions on the football field. But I think CJ, the way he's wired, his background, this is a great point, Brandon. He's running track because he wanted to get faster and he wanted to get better. And he's down to a 10.83 now on the 100 meters. And it was actually 10.7, but there was a timing issue at one meet where everything got skewed. And he's 6'4", he's about 200. Brandon, he will have track practice in the morning. He will lift with his weight training coach after that. And he doesn't care how much he lifts. Whatever his strength and conditioning coach says, he's going to lift it. He doesn't worry about getting too big like some receivers might. And then he will go and have a full football practice, man. They're going to be in full pads at Milton on Monday. They've already had 2 days. Side road there, man. Brandon, that is a hugely talented team.
Yeah.
A loaded team. I think they bring back like 80, 90% of their roster. The 7A defending champions are going down to 5A. You want to talk about a loaded football team where there's like 6 or 7 guys on defense that might be their best defensive player. And they've got a receiver like that in CJ Wiley. They got a Miami commitment at quarterback. They just got Ethan Barbour, the Georgia commitment to plug and play there at tight end for them. A whole lot of weapons. That football is going to be in the air a lot at Milton, but you keep looking at that video of Wiley, man, and it's right. His name is buzzing around the state because I've never seen combo size, speed, but this is very important mindset, Brandon. If we put CJ Wiley in the way he's wired into the body of a 5'11", 6 foot receiver who's maybe only six feet, maybe only about 185 pounds, he would still thrive at Georgia because the way he's wired to work, he's very disciplined in everything he does. He keeps the main thing the main thing. He doesn't look too far ahead about, hey, what's going to project me to the NFL? How many catches may I get year one? He's just going to worry about what he needs to do every day, each day, to be the best player he can be.
I wanted to finish what you mentioned there. I learned this week, did not know it. Perhaps it's just happened. But Ethan Barbour has transferred from where he was going Alpharetta now to Milton. And, you know, without getting into, you know, anything involving like the actual teams themselves, from a recruiting standpoint, I think this can get kind of interesting because Luke Nickel, who is going to Miami, the Milton quarterback, is a pretty prolific passer. And I think that Barbour's numbers at Alpharetta, you know, perhaps a little bit better than some people realize. He's, you know, pretty, you know, accomplished pass catcher. Seeing a guy like that, you know, getting passes from kind of a sort of a high major quarterback recruit like Nickel, I think that's going to give Georgia fans a little bit of a different kind of evaluation of Barbour as a player here. I expect him to be a part of that offense. A very interesting transfer. Milton, obviously no stranger to taking on, you know, big players. It seems like they have a lot of good off seasons. But in this particular case, adding a player like Barbour could turn out to be very interesting.
Interesting and almost maybe unfair, man. What are you going to do with CJ Wiley out there at X? And then you're going to have Barbour kind of being great on interior run, inside run game as a punishing blocker. But you're right. The stats at his former high school, Alpharetta High, back that up. He's about a 800, 900 yard a year guy. He's about a, you know, 50, 60 catches, double-digit touchdowns. You add all that to the Milton offense, you're right. They got a Miami committed quarterback. They got a anywhere he wants to commit in the world in C.J. Wiley, wide receiver right now. They got a Georgia commit at tight end. They got another Auburn commit that's kind of like a flex end on the offense, and they return most of their pieces. I mean, it is almost going to be unfair when you got a guy like Barbour, who's such an asset in the run game. And it was pretty cool talking to him yesterday, man. Barbour, he's got this thing where he calls it the commit to the G challenge, or I think a media guy whose last name is Centel said him and Bo Walker are kind of in a race to see who can get how many guys that they can put on the board. He said, I led him to Georgia. I was the major player influence in them committing to Georgia. And Barbour told me, I'll give you this on your air, Brandon, before a lot of people read it on the pages of DogNation.com. Barbour has three guys targeted as his next guys for the class. He said he does deserve credit for Darren and Kinnabon, the New Jersey defensive end who committed back in G-Day. He said, don't worry about Bo Walker. Bo Walker is still very strong with Georgia in his opinion. He has three names. One of them behind door number one, Travis Smith Jr. The second one behind door number two is his longtime youth league teammate, C.J. Wiley. They played together at Alpharetta, but they also played together coming up a lot during their youth football days. So those two guys, Brandon, they are tight. They are tight like that. And then the third one, I know you love a little intrigue in your Dog Nation daily program. He's like, I got a mystery guy in my back pocket. Wow. Nobody really knows about, nobody really talks about, but he also thinks that that guy's going to become a dog as well. Or at least that's, those are the guys he's really going to work on to make sure that happens for the University of Georgia.
Jeff, it is great stuff. We appreciate you being here today. We know you've got a lot of great things coming for us at DogNation.com there as well. So we'll look forward to reading that. Thank you for your time on the program here today, and have a great weekend. We'll look forward to speaking to you soon.
Yeah, we'll try to pop up on the site today, quick reads on Travis Smith Jr., C.J. Wiley, and also Juan Gaston. I'll probably be good for at least two of those three.
That sounds great, Jeff. Good stuff on that.
Hey, man.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
So, quick confession here. We were talking about Levi Strauss a little bit earlier, and I realized I was wearing some Levi's jeans. So, today is Friday, and I'm sure your workplace is perhaps like this. In this building on Friday, there is nobody. Now, the entire team of folks that put Dog Nation Daily together, we're all here and we're all working hard. You got Kaylee back there. You got Cody back there. Jay Black's here. So we got a huge team of folks putting this show on. We work hard each and every day. The rest of the building's completely empty. So it's a Friday. I thought, you know what? I'm gonna wear some shorts today. Nobody's paying attention. Nobody's here. I just wear some shorts. People can't see the shorts under the desk anyway. Then I remembered that when I turn to the side here and do when I go to this shot with the interview, you know, oftentimes the jeans end up kind of showing up in the picture a little bit. It's like, well, if I wear shorts today, just given the way our new studio is configured, I'm going to end up outing myself there on that. So I guess in true form to the content, I have my Levi's jeans on today. Hey, speaking of venerable companies, let's transitioning now to cruising around the SEC, courtesy of Royal Caribbean. I told you yesterday, proud to announce that coming up in July, I get to be, and this is not a brag, this is just something that I'm just really proud and very thankful of, to be honest with you. I get to be one of the first to be on the newest ship in the fleet for Royal Caribbean, the newest of the Oasis class of ships. Utopia of the Seas is set to debut, and I get to debut with it, at least among the very first, to get a chance to see what this ship is all about. And there are so many things on this ship that I think it's going to make it so much fun for so many people. And as I told you yesterday, the thing about this that I love the most is the fact that it's going to be so convenient for so many of you, because if you live in the Atlanta area, Port Canaveral is the closest port to you, probably the easiest to get to. Oftentimes, most of the time when we go there, our family, we just drive down there. And so it's easy to drive to. It's just past Orlando. And it's also going to be a brand new Oasis class ship sailing on a 3- and 4-night itinerary. All of the sailings going to Perfect Day, Coco Cay. You know how much I love all of that. But it's also got so many amazing concepts that have never been introduced before, like the Royal Railway Express. How about this? And you saw the video right there. It's going to be a restaurant set up to look like a train car. And when you get inside the train car, You've got these sort of simulation screens that function like train windows. You're going to be almost like you're rolling the rails, you know, across America in so many different spots, and just getting a chance to experience something unlike anything that's ever been done on a cruise ship before. Also, people love Izumi. Izumi's got a new location. That's a teppanyaki-style hibachi restaurant, also with sushi. And it's going to have a brand new location in the Central Park area. So there are going to be so many things. There will be so much fun about Utopia of the Seas, and I can't wait to come back and tell all of you about that. Of course, if you want your own trip on board Utopia of the Seas, Jessica Slater can help you with that. You can give her a call, 770-718-9147. That's 770-718-9147. You can also email her, jslater@dreamvacations.com. All right, let's go cruise around the SEC with some news here. A name that we mentioned yesterday as having not yet found a home in the transfer portal now has. That's Dominic Williams, defensive lineman from TCU, and he's going to Oklahoma. Now, I find this to be interesting for a couple of reasons. Thing number one is, and there's a lot about the new world of college athletics that, just to be completely honest, we're not sure we like. Total confession on that. But there are some things that I think are undeniably fine. And the sheer number of intriguing teams in the SEC has just gone up because of the addition of Texas and Oklahoma. There's no doubt that's true. And Oklahoma is one of those teams, I would say, along with, like, say, a Tennessee a little bit and a Texas A&M a little bit, that it almost feels like they're just not quite getting as much conversation. And I think that in the case of Oklahoma especially, they really are overlooked, I believe. When you add a defensive lineman like this, one of the guys sort of thought to be one of the better defensive line names out of the transfer portal, it's just a reminder that with Brent Venables as head coach and a guy like Jackson Arnold at quarterback, Oklahoma could be set up for maybe more wins than you realize. The other part of this that I find to be interesting is the team we've been telling you for a while that has made it very clear they are open for business for defensive line transfers, and yet so far has been pretty quiet in all this, that's LSU. The situation with LSU reminds me a little bit of what Billy Napier kind of faced the spring portal the last couple of years, where it seemed like they were really hoping to use that to bring in some finishing touches on what they thought would be a roster that maybe would have a chance to be somewhat competitive, and they just weren't able to make those moves. And part of the failure of Napier thus far as Florida coach, I believe, has been due to, you know, last 2 years, this year not so much, but the because there's not anybody there, but the last couple of years of, you know, just not being able to make the sort of moves that gave you a chance to supplement your roster well enough to be competitive. And if Brian Kelly, the LSU coach, is speaking out during spring and saying, listen, our transfer portal priority is going to be defensive linemen, you know, at what point in time does LSU bring in these guys? Last year they took 14 transfers. They're not afraid to take transfers. It seems like they're not quite pulling in those, though, to the degree they'd like. And so if you look at a team like LSU, that because of the schedule, because of the talent that's already in place, they're at the cusp of what could maybe be competitive. Yet right now, not seeming to find those final portal acquisitions that give them a chance to do that. I saw where Reese Davis had an interesting statement this week about the Texas quarterback situation, saying that, listen, I know there's a lot of hype around Arch Manning. He had 3 touchdowns in the spring game. He is a Manning. His last name is Manning. He's obviously going to get a lot of attention. But Reese Davis says, don't get it twisted that Quinn Ewers as the Texas quarterback is going to have, as Davis calls it, a very long leash. And I think that Ewers ends up being one of the most fascinating players in America here this year. He's a little bit like, not quite to this extreme, but a little bit like what I think Jalen Milroe could be at Alabama. We haven't talked nearly enough about the Alabama quarterback situation, but it's fascinating because there's a chance that Milroe takes the next step with his development. He's mentioned along with the best quarterbacks in America this year. That's at least a possibility. But it's also very likely that, or at least there is a possibility that Milroe could also lose his job before the year is done because of the value we think that Alabama sees in Austin Mack, their recent transfer. The Texas situation probably isn't quite as, I guess, disparate as that in terms of outcomes. But there is a world in which Ewers is just the best player at his position this year, surpassing even what Carson Beck's able to do. Ewers' odds to be the number one overall pick are the same as Carson's. After all, he's 3-1. But this was a guy who I don't think played at a game-changing level against Washington, the college football playoff. I don't think he was a major factor in that game to the extent that I thought he had a chance to be. And so for Texas here this year, who does, in its own mind, have pressure to succeed in year one of the SEC, knowing it's a 12-team playoff and knowing it's all that kind of stuff, You know, what happens if he is sort of just only okay? And you know you've got a guy like Arch Manning waiting in the wings. I think it would take a lot for Texas to ever truly bench Quinn Ewers. But could we see a situation like, I don't know, it's probably not a perfect comparison to, say, Florida in 2006, for those of you who can remember back that far, back when Florida was relevant. But, you know, we're a situation where it's a, you know, back then it's a Leak and Tebow playing, you know, kind of in a sort of a two-quarterback system. Could Texas eventually become a two-quarterback situation this year because Manning's just too good not to play and Ewers is not quite so good that he eliminates the thought of what do we have in Arch Manning? I think that could get pretty interesting. A couple of other points here real quick. Sam Pittman made an appearance on the Paul Feinbaum show yesterday, and it reminds me of why, in addition to the fact that Pittman was very good for Georgia while he was here, you know, I openly root for Sam to win games because I want this personality to be in college football. So Sam Pittman's been very famous for a long time, having a big Kentucky Derby party there at his house. Well, this year he's actually going to the Derby. He was bragging about the outfit he was going to wear. I'm sure many of you are aware the fancy outfits are a big part of the Kentucky Derby. And, you know, Sam was on the Feinbaum show saying, listen, my outfit's going to be so nice. People are going to think I own one of those horses. Well, first of all, Pittman makes enough money. He could own one of the horses if he wanted to. But this is more just him sort of joking about how good-looking he thinks he's going to be. And there obviously aren't a lot of coaches that can do that as comfortably as Pittman can. I love his personality in the sport. I hope he wins enough to remain the Arkansas coach because I think the sport's just better overall for having fun and interesting figures like Pittman in it. And I hope he has a good time this weekend and hope he has an even better time this fall enough to hang around as the Arkansas coach because he is very entertaining for many of us. One final point here for our cruise around the SEC, courtesy of Royal Caribbean, to get to here just for a moment. And it's this. So Ross Dellinger, who I think is a very good reporter working for Yahoo, has more details in a story we told you about the other day, the potential settlement from the NCAA and some of the major conferences related to some of these lawsuits, the most prominent one being the House versus NCAA lawsuit, which basically seeks back pay for former college athletes and, you know, larger revenue and significant, you know, paid revenue for current college athletes. Ross Dellinger has new details on, you know, the potential settlement that could be coming there. I think it's worth your time. I realize this is a little bit tedious, but I do think seeking this out, it's a free story at Yahoo, seeking this out to read is probably worth your time if you kind of want to know where college athletics might be going. Now, there are two things that Dellinger points out in this piece that I just don't think nearly enough people are talking about. And I just wish there'd be more attention paid to. It's these two things in particular. That in the move to kind of professionalize what has been, you know, collegiate amateur athletics, two things seem to be very possible to happen that I don't think are a net benefit, a net positive for players overall. Right now, when you start fall camp, college football teams are allowed a roster limit of 120. That's 85 scholarships plus walk-ons. Dellinger reports in the new world, that number's going to go down. The other thing that Dellinger reports is when it comes to the revenue sharing that could go on as much as, you know, $20 million per year, you know, between teams and the players that are you know, participating in their sports, that some athletic departments may not think they can do that or they may not want to do that, and they choose to get out of the major college football game. And the thing that I've been sort of sounding the alarm about for the entire time is when you look at the future of college football, it may seem like professionalizing this and bringing more payment for players into the space, that may seem like it's good for players. But the question I would ask is if all of this results in fewer players playing major college football, and Dellinger's story reports that as a possibility, and fewer teams involved in college football, Dellinger also reports that as a possibility. In other words, if the professionalization of college football looks more like the NFL, where you've only got 32 teams and you've only got 53-man rosters, then is that a net positive for players overall? I think it's a fair question. It's one that I wish more people would ask. We'll make that cruising around the SEC, courtesy of Royal Caribbean. And here on Dog Nation Daily now, let's turn our attention to what has kind of been a Friday staple for us before, and good to have this back. Our friends at the Finish Long Drink on a Friday for a segment we're going to call the Long Finish here. looking at some of the big news around Georgia over the course of the last week, and obviously as we head towards a big weekend there as well. Let me start with this. Earlier in the show, we talked about a contract extension for Georgia coach Kirby Smart, but that is not the only contract extension that Georgia announced on Thursday. Athletic director Josh Brooks also getting the mix on this. Kirby Smart is locked down as Georgia coach through 2033. Josh Brooks, the athletic director, he has his future secured at Georgia through 2030, which we certainly send congratulations out to Josh Brooks there on that. Very happy for him. And I think this is also, I think, a point in which you got to start asking questions about what does the future of athletic director look like in major college athletics? I'm not even sure Josh Brooks necessarily fully knows the answer to that question, because a lot of this stuff is being made up as we all go along here. But I think we can all think back to, if we're of similar ages, when we were kids, the athletic director was the ex-coach. At Georgia, that was truly Vince Dooley. It was the ex-coach, and it was sort of a coach's mindset, former coach leading other coaches. That's kind of what this was. Perhaps it was a figurehead, or perhaps it was just a sort of an extension of regular athletics. But whatever it was, in the 21st century, the role of athletic director has been completely redefined. Now it's more of a fundraiser. Now it's more of not the ex-coach, but someone who sort of operates like a salesperson. That's sort of the way in which good athletic directors, the template, I think, has kind of evolved. It's someone who knows how to make sure the flow of money, not just the revenue from ticket sales and TV, but the actual donations, the flow of money is coming like it's supposed to. It seems like one way or another, we're headed towards another evolution of this, where as we move through the next few years, it's more than just how much money can we raise. It's how do we choose to allocate those dollars? How do we smartly, you know, put money towards, you know, player salaries, or, you know, or making sure other sports remain viable? It seems like the role of athletic director is probably going to be a little more CEO, CFO style than it's been in the past. And we think that Josh Brooks is probably set up well to handle that if that is the case. One of the things that Brooks has no doubt talked about over the last few days is the issue involving Georgia baseball, which I, for the most part, don't think is all that serious. But I also, listen, as someone who loves the Diamond Dogs and just loves, you know, Georgia athletics in general, I'd love to come on the show and be like, this is a witch hunt. Georgia baseball is being unfairly maligned. If there's evidence that allows me to say that, I haven't found it yet. You know, if there is a piece of evidence that sort of proves innocence here beyond all reasonable doubt, I haven't quite found that yet. Many of you know there was a scene in the Georgia bullpen this past weekend at number one Texas A&M, where Georgia ultimately got the win there on Sunday. A&M fans seeing video, and we'll show you this on the screen here, of what appears to be some questionable behavior from a Georgia pitcher down there in the corner of the bullpen, seemingly doing something before going out on the mound and absolutely mowing down the Aggies for a Georgia win. We're not quite sure what's going on here. We're not going to speculate too much about what it might have been. As said before, for all the Aggie fan message board posters who are saying bad things about UG about this, if we could fire back with, is it exculpatory? Is that the word? Is it exculpatory? Is that the right word? Exculpatory evidence that clears the Diamond Dogs here, of course we would. We haven't quite found the evidence yet to put George in the clear on this, but our Cody Chaffins, a great colleague, was there in Athens yesterday when Wes Johnson spoke about all of this. We'll tell you what Wes Johnson had to say here on the topic. Let's show you this.
Guys, I'm going to make a blanket statement. And, you know, I don't have time in my day to deal with online subjective distractions. We teach our players to play by the rules. And that's just where I'm at, man.
Mm-hmm. Well, there you go. Listen, beautiful video coming out of Foley Field, too. Fun series that's coming up this weekend against Vanderbilt. I said this yesterday. The fact that the Aggies fans are more upset about this than the Aggies themselves are probably gives you a little bit of an idea how commonplace some of this perhaps might be. That's my suggestion here. But either way, a lot of fun for the Diamond Dogs. Big series at home here at Foley Field as the Vandy boys come calling. If you know anything about college baseball, easy to root against Vanderbilt. And, of course, we'll be cheering on the Georgia Bulldogs, no doubt about that. And that is the long finish here on Dog Nation Daily this week, of course, brought to you by our friends, The Finish Long Drink. And as you roll towards a weekend, weekends it seems like are never long enough, but they're always made better when you're enjoying The Finish Long Drink, whether it be the peach-flavored version, which you can find for a limited time here in the Peach Stay, or any of the other long drink varieties, including, you know, the one that's my favorite. It's the blue can. It's the grapefruit flavor. It's the gin kick that goes along with that. Some of you love the long drink cranberry. Some of you love the long drink zero sugar. In fact, we kind of had that as one of our golden shoes the other day. Folks enjoying the no carbs, no sugar. Coming off a recent cruise vacation, that's probably a pretty good idea for me to enjoy as much of that as I can. Or some of you like the long drink strong, 8.5% alcohol by volume. It's a great story, a ready-to-drink cocktail, which starts, in Finland back in the 1950s, been in America now the last few years, and in Georgia there as well. Celebrity investors, a lot of things have made this a really fun entrant into a great category of beverage, and we think the best tasting, entrant in that category, our friends at The Finish Long Drink. So please find out more online at thelongdrink.com. That is thelongdrink.com. And as we wrap up here today, speaking of our Dog Nation cruise on board Allure of the Seas, one of our buddies, Nestor, who I think you've seen on video, he's the one that wins the Mikhail Williams jersey and gives a very, very, I think, enjoyable celebration and all that. He also sent this in there as well. I guess he also won as a part of our trivia and got a chance to walk away with something very similar to what we keep on our desk here, the Gator Hater sign. Ness writing in to say, the newest addition to my office is now official. I'm a Gator Hater for life. So Nestor got himself one of those Gator Hater license plates that we, you know, have made famous around here, and he's got one right there in his office. How good does that look with some of the other Georgia stuff he's got there? Very impressive stuff from Nestor, a great guy and a great part of our Dog Nation cruise, and a well-deserved golden shoe coming his way there on that. Lousy, stinking Gators. How about 1,273 days? That's how long it's been since Florida has beaten Georgia. That is good news here on a Friday. Hope you all have a great weekend. We'll see you back here Monday, Dog Nation Daily, presented by Kroger.